Okay, welcome. This is Bob and Cameron again, and this is our 42nd show, and we're going to my book, page 79. So take a look at it if you have it. So what is said at the top of 79, I say, the point is that the Internet brought out the fact that media aped us because the Android memes started to look like people thanks to the new graphic user interface. They were no longer reading text. They were talking cartoons on your computer. So it's aping us, no longer shaping. I keep pointing this out. Nobody gets it. Nobody gets the significance of the fact that the Android meme was aping us, different from shaping us. So you remember on the album, The Medium is the Massage, it says at 1856 into the album, we shape our tools, and thereafter our tools shape us. So that's the cliche, medium is the massage. But earlier in the album, at the 6 minute 24 second, it says, we shape our tools, and thereafter our tools ape us. So I take the ape thing, miming, but I make it literal. It becomes more and more us, and it eventually leads to your clone. That's technology looking like you, right? You see that?
Uh-huh.
So we are moving towards being aped.
But aping... for McLuhan, would go back to Lewis.
Apes of God.
He would be taking aping in a variety of senses, right? It's not only to create resemblance.
Yeah.
It's also to cartoon, as you say right there. It's to cartoon both positively and negatively. So there's a lot going on in the word aping, for
yes.
sure.
Yes, and actually the quote I read is at the bottom of 78 in my format. It may not be in yours. So then I go to the top of 79, and I say, aping, that's in quotes, aping is not like shaping. It apes us. It imitates us. And I say the first stage of the Android meme, the global hologram, started imitating people, showing the rough parts of humans, violent TV, stupid talk shows, violent talk shows. You know, it was very austere and antiseptic in the 50s, right? Everything was so proper. It's amazing you go back and look at them compared to the noise of the 90s. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that, you know, anybody from the 50s, an adult, would be shocked at in 40 years what was going on. You know, but the audience
sure.
got used to it. And in McLuhan's foreword to Wilson Bryan Key's Subliminal Seduction, he kind of explains why there's sexual imagery and death imagery in the ad pictures, the drinks and stuff, because he said the more sex there is, or whatever you call that, hedonism, the world becomes more violent. That's an important point, so that the ads, if they did have subliminals in them, they would have to have negative, positive and negative images, sex and death. So the going together of sex and death, he presents it as if it's answering the mystery that Key doesn't get, Wilson Bryan Key. He never seems to understand why this is happening, but McLuhan says it has to be. But that's anticipating what I'm talking about. The human reality is mimed, and it just keeps escalating. Now, it's not an issue of sex and violence. That's a given. Now it is the corruption of drug addiction and the crudeness in social life. No approximation of decency. What other complaints do they have? People being, quote, dumb.
Swearing
and slovenly dress. You see a lot of that in California. People going to, you know, supermarket. I started being there in the 90s and seeing it then, and going to the supermarket, you know, wearing nothing.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah. Slovenly in mind as well, right?
Yes.
At least for somebody like myself, and I think this was generally true, if you were coming out of Canada or coming out of flyover country, and you came to California in the late 60s or 70s, then it seemed like a different planet.
Yep.
It seemed, and the women were so accepting and so sort of cool compared to any woman you'd ever seen in your life, that this was, it was just like a society that had no clothes on.
Yeah.
It was great.
A nudist colony. But,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
I think what I wanted to say is that as you get past the, well, the sex and violence is happening, more and more people are abusive in their relationships and stoned, you get crudeness in communication, chemical body communication, speech. And so by the 90s, everybody said, fuck this, fuck that, which they did not say in the 60s and 50s, right?
Correct.
You did not say that. And McLuhan said that fuck was a tactile word. So as we got more and more into tactility, extension of it in the tactile global hologram, people's language just became more tactile. And,
correct.
And everybody is swearing. And it's, I mean, you know, Trump probably, he probably swore during a couple of his speeches a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. And Ian and Bob, you've got Trump swearing.
Is that right? Is it
yeah,
like
calling somebody a fucking idiot? I forget who. Oh, General Milley.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean that's a few months ago. You remember that? It's not this week's posting.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, a few weeks ago, I think.
Yes.
But, tell me this, Bob, because I don't really understand it myself. I haven't given any thought to it, but the emerging tactility comes out disguised, right? It comes out in a very crude form.
Abrasive.
Almost.
Abrasive
yeah.
and abrupt are the words McLuhan used. Yeah, that's what I mean by tactility. Most people think of it as a flowing thing, but we talked about the last episode about that's a holdover of the sleek surfaces of automobiles in the first half of the 20th century. You know, the hot media had a smooth surface, and people thought they were flowing when they started to get into the tactile world. And McLuhan talks about flux and flow, and people thought that was this condition I'm talking about, and then it became part of the normal vernacular. You go with the flow.
Right. But yeah. What we're talking about is tactility as a kind of manifestation, right?
Yeah.
In the sense of you have carbon as an element, and then you have graphite as a manifestation of that element, but you could also have a diamond, or you could also have carbon in a whole bunch of compounds. So tactility, if it appears smooth, for example, on a car, or if it appears crude, as on some sort of television show, those are not tactility itself. What they are is manifestations of tactility.
Right, because tactility is not a sense. So it translates into what you're just saying, those two qualities. That's the sensory approximation of tactility.
Approximation or expression?
Expression, right? Approximation. It is not tactility, but it's how tactility comes across when you translate
correct.
It into your senses. Maybe it's even proprioceptive and haptic.
Right.
You know?
But doesn't that tell us some interesting things about how McLuhan thinks about the senses? Right? The senses are not seeing or hearing or something like this. They're structures that express themselves in various ways. And so in order to understand, let's say, tactility, you have to understand the structure of tactility and then the different ways in which that structure can express itself.
Yeah, the quote you sent me tonight, Nihilism Exposed, 1955, it is the business of the artist to be constantly shifting the scenery of existence about in accordance with his infallible intuition of the cosmic weather. The shifting of the scenery existence is the shifting of the senses, but the senses are manifest. The shifting is the invisible tactility.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you say the global situation. Now, the way and the degree in which these events interpenetrate varies, and the degree, this is from 1959, and the degree to which they enter the minds of decision maker varies. But in the world about us, the endless decisions that are being taken by many kinds of people are taken habitually in an atmosphere in which everything happens at once. That's the what you're trying to say, the manifestation, the expression of an increasingly tactile ineffability of the global hologram. So the world is, McLuhan said TV was tactile, but then by the late 60s, the global environment is tactile because TV has a tactile relationship to the other media, which means there's some resonant node that's forming, the global membrane, which you can't see or feel because it's not a sense, but the interaction, translation of it into a known sense is increasingly abrasive, abrupt, and interactive. And the world, you see, what's funny, you can look at the images of science fiction in the first half of the 20th century where people talk about a future situation like, say, Brave New World. Okay, the people are on drugs, but the abrasiveness and the rudeness and the indecency, the way people turned out by the year 2000, is not portrayed in the novels of the science fiction of the pre-World War II. They don't see the what McLuhan called the surface manners of life becoming, quote, more tactile, which is abrupt and crude, because it's more abrasive. The interaction, the bumping, which you think is in the brain, this flow of data coming in with your senses, which is, might be synesthetic, and then this ineffable organism of non-sensory tactility organizes the data into a coherent consciousness according to the bias of the culture. That, in old terms, would be the mind, right? Humans don't know what the mind is, but the blankness, the nothingness of tactility is mind. It's an update of that word, right?
Correct. Correct.
So we get
generally that's not only not seen in McLuhan research; it's avoided. It's like ideas that are penned off somewhere that you can't go near because it's radioactive.
Yeah, and I mean, I know there's a couple of books in the late 50s, The Coming Mind War, The War for the Men's Minds, and that's visual Gutenberg interpretation of brain content or propaganda messages, and McLuhan, you know, spent his life saying, no, there's an environmental effect. The mind war is tactility. It's actually, you get a glimpse of mind if you see it as an expression of tactility, because he brings in the senses, whereas the traditional literate thing is the mind is split from the body, right? And that's a mistake, but that's a visual bias. You'll hear politicians, that's about as far as they got. It's a battle for men's minds, you know? But it's a battle within the tactile interfaces, which is, you know, anthropomorphized or made back on the chemical body terms of mind. So we're still in, if you know mind is tactility, you can go back and read something written in 1910 that might say the battle for men's minds. That's tactility. You can see those words are appropriate if you know mind means that, or at least McLuhan updated the imaging or the operation of the collective mind. So that's
sure, you can see that in the Greeks already.
For example, what's an example?
The Greeks are often talking about different ways of looking at the world, different types of mind.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Havelock saw as arising as a result of the alphabet.
Yeah.
For the first time, people become conscious of different ways of exercising the mind. And so in Plato and Aristotle, for example, there's a great concern with how different philosophers look at things and how the ways in which they're right and wrong in doing that. So what you were talking about in 1910, which I think is absolutely right, actually is also characteristic of Plato and Aristotle. So it's characteristic of the whole tradition for 2,500 years.
Right. And the alphabet and writing brought in nuances of meaning in semantics. So it got more complicated in people's communication, whereas pre-literate people were more abrupt. They were aware of resonance and multi-leveled, but they lived abruptly, whereas the alphabetic effect made humans the opposite. They were not as blunt. They were abstract. But the ground was simple, whereas in the pre-literate, the figure is abruptness, but they're aware of the multi-leveled complexity. Once you get into the writings, Plato and Aristotle's time, the figure is the abstraction, non-abruptness, the multiple nuances of meaning, which leads into, you know, dialectics and arguments over semantics. But the ground of it is a simple flattening caused by the alphabet. So two figure grounds there. So then you get to this time. Tactility, and I have this in the Croker quadrant, because the way Croker writes, he's talking about technology in simple terms coming alive. But he translated it into surplus flesh sitting on the sidelines while technology becomes a vicious battle. So that's tactility, but it's among media that are not involved with the chemical body, like previous analog media were extensions. It's independent of and separate. So Croker would say that the genes left the chemical body and leaped into the technology, the cyberspace, and took on the world, that world. So tactility squared was what I was trying to get at in terms of this beginning of a separation between technology and chemical body life, what people called physical, which was enhanced by literacy. Before that, people had more ineffable sense. They had the five humors or the four humors. They weren't so locked into the 3D image that printing press brought in. They were biased during the Catholic Church era, the manuscript era, 1500 years up to the printing press, and other parts of the world didn't go through that. They still had crude, primitive oral tactile or audial visual tactility. So you can see across the world, most of the world was still audial tactile. This weird mutation was happening with the phonetic alphabet in Europe and then the manuscript. And that was suppressing awareness of tactility. So you can see in the Victorian era, the ultimate peak of it before it flips into the crazy 1910 reality for Europe, everybody is trying to be stiff and proper and surface decent. They wouldn't talk about the cliche was, no talk about politics or religion in public, right? Remember that cliche about the Victorian era?
Yeah, when that is said is exactly the time when the penny press is evolving into nonstop talk about war and religion.
Well, you know what McLuhan calls it?
People's affairs.
Yeah, McLuhan called it in Understanding Media, human interest, in quotes, human interest took over in journalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sort of the downstairs of the upstairs that you're talking about.
Yeah, that's the Victorian veneer of proper visual propriety is going away, but it has its final supernova of everybody's extreme. And so you have in London, this is where W.T. Stead comes along, and he exposes that all of the fucking society was a... Beg your pardon?
No, I didn't say anything. I'm laughing.
Oh, yeah. All of Victorian society is, raping women and stuff. who were this was just before they could start really getting jobs, right? So the only choice was to be a prostitute. And Stead, W.P. Stead, who was Joyce's hero, and there's Grace Eckley's books on Finnings Wake, see Stead as a major character reference for HCE, Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker. So Stead's right. An interesting guy, but he's the one who exposed the child prostitution and just child abuse and slavery and all that, and started to change the society of London, which led into Fabian socialism and people really trying to perfect society even more. But he was the guy who was the catalyst, and he was put in jail in 1885 for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was a big scandal. And then he started a Reader's Digest kind of newsletter, and that was popular all over the world. So Stead was a big deal. And if you go to 91st Street and 5th Avenue in Manhattan, there's the reservoir and a wall around the reservoir. And right at the corner of 5th and 91st, there's a statue to W.T. Stead, because he was coming over on the Titanic, and he drowned in the Titanic, but he was sponsored by the Warburgs and the wealthy elite of New York, who then become, you know, in Ezra Pound's time, Jewish conspirators causing World War II and that. But they were sponsoring. The rich people needed a guy to talk about things with more of the electric hive mind, or beginning to be appreciative or not being so crude towards the working class. You had to put on a veneer of including them. And so you started to have a lot of reforms. And Stead was the guy who did that, but he's not known.
Yeah.
So the mess of what you just said, the underbelly of the downstairs, Stead is the figure for moving it and preparing to go into the electric world, where you start to wear your conscience on your sleeve and you start to put on people and try not to be class. And this is what Lewis sort of got upset about, that the artists were putting on this hypocritical hanging out with the working class, or were hanging out with people and dropping the Victorian propriety. So you have a lot of scandals in the Bloomsbury Group, where everybody's fucking everybody else, right? And the,
yep.
The couples, the married couples. And so that is... So we're why did you bring up... Okay, so the mind. So the battle for men's mind is what's coming in the early part of the 20th century. And that's actually erroneous. It's a battle over what to do with the new extended tactility with the electric media, radio, movies, telephones, and then television. That tactility no culture could handle. And then when the... Android Me comes along and technology separates from the chemical body, takes on a life of its own, and the population over the last 34 years has to get used to it. The media is out of control. We can't control the media. That's a popular expression of something that's not in anybody's social framing. So I call that the squaring of tactility. So the Android meme is the squaring of tactility. The tactility leaps out of the first nature and goes into second nature in extremists. And that's led to the hypertexting ESP world of today, where the kids don't, the general impression of older people is that the young kids don't talk much. They're just texting in silence, right? And that's
right.
It's a kind of ESP. So McLuhan writes in the 50s, there's an analog ESP with the television environment. But then the global theater complicates that, and then you get an extended ESP plus the digital autonomy of the individual we talked about last time, the isolation of the chemical body that he doesn't have in the hive mind of the 50s and 60s. So then the abrasiveness of an individual, which becomes the alt-right, all these people, many just working class or who are got their own blogs and Web 2.0, expressing and abrasive and yelling at Wolf Blitzer and CNN and the mainstream media, which is an old after image of centralized media of the analog era, era. So everybody's yelling and screaming and maintaining their and making a big value out of their independence, out of their freedom, their rights, their individual rights. And that's what that's the meme retrieval that Trump ran on.
I think that's a good story.
Good, good. And did I make it too linear? Phasal shifts?
No. That's I think that's important for your book.
Yeah. So
your pamphlet.
Yeah. So I'm talking about that here. So let's see what I say. Where's evidence that I did say that? So I have here a top of 79. Aping is not like shaping. It apes us. It imitates us. And I say the first stage of the android meme, first stage, the global hologram, started imitating people showing the rough parts of humans, violent TV, stupid talk shows, violent talk shows. This was the way humans were, and TV was no longer a polite place, that being the 50s. It became a rough place, and that was the android meme, looking like people. And people got, now, this is a silly statement, android meme, looking like people, but I'm trying to say that the humans are becoming more tactile in their chemical bodies, and they're more and more adjusting to the tactility. So it's actually looking like rough, pre-literate people. You know what I mean? Losing
mm-hmm, sure.
the whole surface propriety of visual space.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that's the way people really are. Well, for the majority of humanity, they weren't literate. They weren't visual. They were like that.
Sure.
So we're
We all are like that. I mean, it's not as if some people are and some people aren't.
Yeah.
Everybody in their dreams and in their desires and taking a shit or whatever has this aspect to them.
They used to call it the animal aspect.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, as we're talking about this stuff, I keep thinking about Greek temples with gorgons and other monsters like this being a part of the temple, and then in cathedrals.
The gargoyle.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as if this view of or this take on human nature is new in the 1990s. It's
right.
A review. It's a retrieval of something that's always been known, but periodically, like in the Victorian age or like in the 1950s, as you were saying,
yeah.
That side of humanity gets suppressed. And then you get a stupid mask, sort of an idiot mask over society.
In the 50s or later in the 90s?
No, in the 50s is when you have the idiot mask. And then in the 90s, you have more of the gargoyle mask.
Right, because people are participating more. They're less literate hierarchy, so everybody jumps in on the action. And
correct.
Then you get the Jumbotron and football games, and it's just recreation. McLuhan used to say, everybody, no matter who you are, is a nobody at the ball game.
Correct.
So that more and more rowdy audience, now it really makes sense, the progression. Who would have predicted 5 years ago that people would say, fuck president, fuck the president, it's fuck Joe Biden, as a fucking global chant at a football game. You know what I mean?
That's
so
right.
we've become the Roman. This is where you update the Roman, the cliche of the Roman.
That's right.
Stadium,
Colosseum. Yeah.
But it's in the communication world of crudeness, right? We're not watching people get slaughtered physically. We're watching them be fucking incredibly outrageous and impolite in public expression, to the point they're saying the president fucked Joe Biden. And then there's the irony, the participatory irony of that this girl or somebody changes it to go Brandon to cover up something, bring in some old-fashioned mainstream media decency, and it didn't work. And so that, but it allowed everybody to be crude indirectly. by saying,
correct,
go Brandon, whatever it is, instead of fuck Biden, you know. But
that's right.
You know,
but, we should notice in this that it's in the change you were noting, say, between the Romans and the and 1990s, is it's not that the slaughter is not going on. Right. This, what
the slaughter's going on in the fucking hospitals and everywhere else.
Well, and all over the world with drone killings and all sorts of stuff. But so this kind of supposed rough tactility actually is another veneer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dialectic going on.
You could call it. It's a nostalgia for chemical body. Simple violence. Let's get back to simple violence. It's not that complex, four-bodied, quadrophenic violence that we're experiencing.
Right.
So the, I was going to say, my mother was shocked when people started wearing sneakers every day.
Yeah.
For her, sneakers was gymnasium. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it was a proper place for sneakers. You did not walk around or go to the mall with sneakers on, for fuck's sake. You know, that was ridiculous. And I think about how she was shocked by that in the 60s and 70s. And what this is the slovenliness we get the early view of in California. I mean, people wore sneakers and didn't tie them. And I always wonder, I said, you're dragging your shoelaces into dog shit. And you're walking back home and walking around with your dirty, dangling shoelaces. It was just, I wouldn't do that. I'd always keep, I kept it. What is it, stiff? What does Dylan say? Keep a clean nose? I made sure my shoelaces were tied.
That's right. And people were going with their untied sneakers to church.
Yeah.
Right?
That
really got to people.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is exactly what McLuhan was pointing out. He called it, you know, going from upstairs to downstairs. He saw we were going to become slovenly pigs. He predicted that. And we were, compared to what people would have said 80 years ago. But as we slowly became that, nobody complained.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the sitting in the bath with the temperature slowly increasing.
Right, right. Now, let me tell you something. In Hawaii, Maui, it's quite pristine in a sense. Beautiful weather all the time, nice clean air, no industrial pollution kind of thing. So I went back to Canada in Ottawa in the summer. Until I was there for the anniversary, 150th anniversary, so it had to be 1917 because, you know, Canada became a country in 1867. So I was there, I arrived on Bloomsday, June 16th, and I spent 3 weeks going through the archives after I'd been given this present of all this 13,000 items. I wanted to go and look at what the archives looked like. And Carolyn was doing something, so I had time to do this. But when I went to a couple of concerts, I couldn't believe the slovenliness of Canadians. You know, I hadn't been around Canadians for 20 years. You know, I was in New York, and that's pretty rough. But then I'd been in Hawaii 9 years. That's like living in a clean bubble or something. And I just saw the women. They were with some concert. Everybody's drinking beer and fucking smoking up and all this shit. Oh, yeah, you were starting to be free on the marijuana, too. It was I found that Canada, it's not what I thought in the 80s and 90s when I lived in Toronto, but to me, Canadian people, women, men in their 30s to 50s were bumpkins, rural bumpkins, and slovenly. You know what I mean? I just really was surprised that, because Canada used to be a clean place compared to America, right?
Correct, correct.
But something changed.
Canadians take things that they've seen in the United States to an extreme.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. One of the ways in which Canada is the do line is not by consciously seeing things that America needs to become aware of, but by turning them into comedy.
Yes.
So that's why you have so many Canadians that are stand up comics or in Second City and stuff like that.
That's right, yeah. Canadians were the leading edge. Lorne Michaels Land, Lorne Michaels, and he's still, it's 50 years now for Lorne Michaels at Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And almost 45. But that's right, a lot of major comedians came out of Canada.
And, absolutely.
And
I can remember when I was in grad school for a couple of years in Edmonton. You'd go to the bar, maybe you play some industrial league hockey or something like this, and then you'd go to the bar, and people would just be talking, half drunk, about the world around them.
Yeah.
And it was funny as hell, right?
Yeah.
These guys were plumbers and electricians and stuff like this, but they could see sort of what was going on in an exaggerated way and laughing about it.
That's right. Well, that's what McLuhan said, that Canadians had the advantage of being beside the beast, and this is why canned lit became important around the rest of the world, because Canadian authors were writing about the media dynamic of North America, focused on America becoming world environment, and the Canadians registered it with a detached, yeah, literate, philosophical perspective, which leads into humor. So, right. So Canadians, they had a bit of detachment more than the Americans did about their own scene, and that led to comedy and self-reflexiveness about the media environment that all of North America was in, but the Canadians had this peculiar detachment. I'm just thinking now, they were like the butlers and the servants who were joking about the aristocrat bosses down in the basement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And to some extent, I believe that's been lost, or in the at least it's in the process of being lost, because Canada is just being swallowed by the American monster.
So, yeah, there's something. Canada doesn't have the charisma it used to have.
Maybe, no, for sure.
Because it was a balanced, literate, sane position. You know, Lester Pearson, Peace Prize, and all
right.
That stuff. But that liberal humanism, it's like the last enclave of liberal decency, and it's been abandoned everywhere. And Canada is finding it hard to adjust to the new tough, abrasive, tactile, squared world.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, Canada's lost, you could say, at the moment.
Yeah. And when did you kind of notice? Would you go back to Canada and notice this, or just pick up on it while you were in California?
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
would you have said that about Canada 15 years ago?
No, probably not. Probably not. I would probably have said 15 years ago that Canada was very divided in its perceptions of itself and of the world.
Yeah, it hadn't totally fallen yet.
Correct.
And I see this kid. You have a kid prime minister, which is maybe Canadians trying to maintain their innocence. You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so. And of course, it's doing the exact opposite.
Yeah. And Trudeau is, you know, that among today in the COVID world, they lump Canada in with Australia as run by the British Empire and it's a fascist place in dealing with the COVID problem. You know, Canada's lost. I hear people, Americans, talk about this. Joe Rogan was, I think, saying it. He was putting down Canada as going along with the Australian authoritarianism or whatever's going on there.
Right. But at least in Australia, they're rebelling.
Yes.
In Canada, they just go along with it. It's unbelievable.
That's right. There's nothing in Canada. It has no way of public expressing himself. It's sort of so passive and given up. Just do to us what you want. You know?
Yeah.
Abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, they just, even people that are very intelligent, just mime what they've heard the day before from the CBC and CTV and the major media in Toronto.
And they find Trump incredibly ugly, you know?
Oh, just if Canadian elections can be maintained as either pro and anti-Trump,
yes,
into the indefinite future, then Canada will always be ruled by some variety of anti-Trump.
Yeah, and McLuhan first wrote about that in the 70s when Trudeau kind of lost around 1974. He got close. He almost lost to Stanfield. And McLuhan wrote an article saying that people thought they were dealing with Nixon. You know, the American news media was really starting to dominate America. I mean, Canada for
Canada, yeah.
For Canadians. And so the Canadian, the Nixon, Watergated Nixon, or those troubles in 73-74, entered into the imagery of Canadian elections. Do you remember that article?
No, but it sounds right what you're
saying. Yeah, he said, you know, Nixon's problems affected Trudeau. It got overlaid somehow. And so I'm saying that's an early version of you either pro, you're Canadian, but you're pro Trump or anti Trump. There's no Canadian culture, no Canadian
Correct.
Political structure.
Yeah, because Toronto desperately wants to be in the United States.
Yeah.
Right? And Toronto basically decides the Canadian election. There's so many seats in metropolitan Toronto.
Yeah.
That if you can convince the Torontonians that they're being American by voting for Trudeau, let's say, then everybody's going to vote for Trudeau.
Yeah. And McLuhan said in like Take Today that the baby boomers and younger would just get jobs in the industrial hardware world of the 1670s. As jumping off points into some more cool software job, role playing. So he said they'd use the industrial structure to leap into something else. And in Toronto is where Canadians go to leap to the States in their career.
Good point. Yeah.
And you know, they end up, a lot of them go to Hollywood.
Silicon Valley,
yes.
Or to New York, Tech City.
Yeah,
That's a huge problem for Canada, the brain drain. As soon as people are understood to have mastered something, could be comedy, could be software, could be anything, then they get bought into the United States. And even in hockey, you look at the United States national hockey team usually has two or three guys whose father was on the Canadian team.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they've come down to play in an American team, have had kids in America, and then those kids grow up to be a great American hockey player.
That's right. They might have been raised in they were raised with Canadian fathers, played hockey.
Correct.
From the time they were 2 years old, right?
Correct.
They grew their kids to get into the NHL.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about the ripples of the weather, the psychic weather of media, in the main expression for post-literate people, sports. You know, sports is the language of art for people.
Yeah.
It's the way people see themselves in sport. So when we had the headbutting in England in the soccer hooligans, remember they had to change the rules in hockey by the 90s? They had to stop the fucking, I wasn't watching it. It was in the States, but I heard about it. They had to tone down the violence of hockey around the 90s or so. Do you remember that? They brought in some stricter rules because the tactility was getting into the game.
Yeah, well, that's happening in football right now.
As
we speak in the NFL.
Oh, yeah?
There's all kinds of new rules about what is roughing and what is, I forget what they call it, maybe it's called roughing the passer. But nowadays there's a whole bunch of rules that have to do with violence. Which were only propagated in the last few years, and which are actually when these penalties are called now, it changes the results of games.
Yeah. So what was the violence happening before that in football?
Oh, people. What was happening is that the game of football was so violent that when people retired,
the brain injuries and all that.
Correct, and people right. committing suicide. So the NFL had to do something because they were getting sued.
Yeah,
and the owners were worried about the image they were projecting. They wanted to have more women viewers and more kid viewers, and right. They wanted to turn the NFL into everybody's living room, basically.
Now, when did this this change happen? Like 5 years ago, 10 years ago? You're saying it's happening right now?
Yeah. Well, it's reaching an extreme now. I think it's at a point where it's going to turn back the other way.
Right.
They're going to take away some of these penalties because they're getting just ridiculous.
Right. Now this, so McLuhan talked about the safety belt in the cars. What do you call those straps? The things you strap on yourself. I don't have a car.
Yeah, safety belt, I think they're called.
Yeah. So he said that was the populist expression of mediocology. We now could see the effects of traffic and that we could get killed, and so we started to became cowards. So we'd strap ourselves in and protect ourselves, and then they put those bubbles in there. But you think back at the 30s, 40s, 50s, people raced around. I don't know how they survived, but they would live with this no protection, right? So
correct.
The seat belt happened to the hardware figure, the car. Now you're talking about a seat belt in where people live in the TV body, the entertainment of the TV body, sports. They put a seat belt on it, hockey and
correct.
Football.
That's right. That's right.
It's the populist form of mediocology, right? Anticipating.
Yeah. But it's so ridiculous, right? The amount of violence going on in the world, in the neighborhood.
50 people killed every fucking weekend in Chicago. I mean, that's nobody would tolerate that.
Right, and then thousands and thousands of people killed around the world.
Yeah.
And it's of no interest at all to the mainstream. Right.
Okay, I got an image from that. The chemical body started to become obsolete in the radio era. And McLuhan said that's why it was not a problem to kill 6,000 people, 6 million people, right? It was just the obsolete chemical body. Now you take the concentration thing, which is a short duration, and it's now, since the 50s, spread out over the whole planet where we're used to, a million people died of starvation. You know, that's what the global concentration camp evoked. The smaller, the world of the Nazi camps went over around the globe. And so we're used to living in Auschwitz, a global Auschwitz, with millions of people being slaughtered all the time.
That's right. Yeah, and so for McLuhan, the great book about this stuff was Mechanization Takes Command, Gideon's book.
Yes. And what is there the violence of social life in there?
No.
Just the mechanization of the chemical body.
Well, it's hinted at, and it's got a long discussion of the slaughtering of animals for food.
Right. Yeah.
How the food industry became mechanized, and so the subtopic there. Is that this is also happening with people.
Yes, and more it happened in hospitals. So McLuhan said anesthetics allowed the surgeons to do more and more torturous things on people. He said that after he fucking got it, after he had 22 hours in under the knife, you know,
in
67. Again, that shows you McLuhan is writing on a diary level, because in 68, after his surgery and all that, In War and Peace and Global Village, he's talking about the hidden environment of anesthetics. He said, why apply it to surgery? Apply it to recovery, he said.
Yeah. And the same thing happens again after he had his heart attack in 1970. Then for a couple of years after that, he's complaining about how the recovery is worse than the disease.
Yeah. Okay, so we're... this is by, what do you say, by means of explaining what I meant by tactility squared. That's what we're
doing. So we're sort of going round and round that topic.
Right.
Which is fine. That's a good way of explaining it.
Yeah. And so I said...
In fact, you even used the phrase, the Baroque spiral of tactility squared.
Yes. Yeah. And spiral is too smooth. It's part of it, but you have to show the discontinuous part of the spiral.
That's right. It should be the maelstrom.
Right, but maybe that's what the fractal is, a repeating thing, but the fractal is complexifying the spiral, right? Or it's turning into a binary. It's all the same, then it shifts, and then it's the same, and then it shifts to a new pattern. It's simple. The fractal, the Mandelbrot fractal, right? Because you're having a repeating pattern.
Sure.
And I guess...
Well, if you compare it to the maelstrom, right? In the maelstrom, some things are going down, some things are going up.
That would be a better image of the spiral.
Because you don't know what's actually happening. You're a part of something that denies orientation.
Yes, and the popular image of that was chaos, and get chaos physics, chaos math, you know. Chaos entered people. Why did people start talking about chaos and sort of saying it got a self-organized order out of it, you know? Well, they were unconsciously retrieving the wisdom of Poe, where the guy grabbed on the barrel and went down into the vortex and popped back up. So there's order in chaos, you know, that was a whole meme in physics. Francesco Varela and Humberto somebody from Chile, they were the popularizers of that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, yeah.
It was going on in the humanities as well.
That's
right?
What
the
I'm talking about,
was,
yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you had Max Smart. I forget the name of his show, but the enemy was chaos, right?
Yeah.
The agents of chaos.
Versus control?
Yeah, exactly.
That's tetrad management versus the pentadic android meme, you know, going past tetradic human control.
Yeah.
Now that's what did you just Get Smart was the show.
Get Smart, that's it, yeah.
So it was in 92 or so, 91, 92, I went up to York and Eric was on a panel with a bunch of people and in the question period, I yelled that out. I said, we're witnessing tetrad management. And I made a pattern out of, I said, Henry Kissinger's a tetrad manager. And I kind of said what you said, the chaos and then the trying to get order, but the pentad was taking over, stopping the chemical body's attempt to, the CIA's attempt to maintain order. And Eric, he shifted his head one way, he went to another. Like, I think he knew kind of what I meant. You know what I mean? And I saw his head getting knocked around. He just shifted. He was looking like, where am I? And then years later, I found out that he said in some public thing, he said, well, Bob Dobbs says that, you know, Kissinger's a tetrad manager. He took it in. You know what I mean? He understood. Yeah, I see the CIA or the management of the word that makes the market. That's tetrad management on the daily pattern recognition level because everybody has to know the daily pattern. That's why they watch the news, or they used to, that is what was managed. The White House, the word that makes the market, managed the ongoing chaos of new patterns that people were noticing, which were
That's
effects
right.
of the software world, not the hardware media, the software media, because people
right.
were processing imagery 24/7 once you got into
and nowadays, the presidential office can't even manage itself.
But that's right. That's where Trump, Ion said that Obama was the last president. So Trump was not a president. He was expressing the present, the total chaos that we were getting in the extremes of Web 2.0, because everybody was expressing themselves so violently all over the place. And then that led to the alt-right icon. But somebody wanted to get back to decency or some kind of order of the tetra, get the tetra managers back in control away from the pentadic Trump. And they came up with this fucking idiot. And it was so so rearview mirror, it failed within 3 months. You know what I mean? And now there's nothing but, hatred for the White House. Disgust with it. Because they couldn't manage the media. Because the White House was not the central organizing point anymore. Trump ruined that. You can't have a chaotic guy that Trump's image was in the word that makes the market, which was the White House. And McClellan called them the trigger men, right? Kissinger was a trigger man. He's the one who organized the big patterns. You remember that quote?
But Trump was also made by the media, right? So
yeah.
It was the media itself in some sort of
I wouldn't
suicide.
Even call it media. I'd call it Android meme or tech body. Trump is in response to the tech body. He's part of the tech body manufacturing, which we're trying to get to explaining. So I'll explain that more when we get there. But what were you saying about it? Did you want to finish your sentence about that? That Trump?
No, I just wanted to say that it's not the case that things can't be managed. It's the things that you want to manage have themselves imploded.
Yeah.
You
can't have management.
No, that's right. The whole concept of management explodes.
Yeah, and that was expressed by McClellan in the 60s when he said, a great philosopher king could not bring order to our time.
Correct.
You know, the elder, the wise elders, the genius elders, it was beyond. And it's interesting, Canada produced Trudeau, who had a wise charisma, but he also had a tribal face, and he actually had a sense of humor in a way. Remember how he made fun of the Queen? He's, you know, sailed down the banister in Buckingham Palace and things like that. You know, he was like Trump walking in front of the Queen a few years ago. So,
right.
And McClellan would point out that you could not have a Trudeau in the White House because America was on the spot. It was the control mechanism. And you couldn't have such casual elan that Trudeau had in the serious White House. You had to have serious deadpan faces like Nixon's or LBJ. Right?
Yep.
And then Carter, he ruined it. His face was too boyish. He didn't keep on the demeanor?
Yep.
What the word is? Demeanor. The demeanor. He didn't have the demeanor of sobriety, which Nixon had. Because remember, Nixon was the corrupt lawyer, and he was up against the surfer Kennedy. Now, the surfer Kennedy wins in 60, but by 68, violent year, getting into the global tactility, the global theater, you need a more serious guy, a guy who knew how to handle the mafia and work with the mafia, right? That's Nixon in 68. And then you have, after the boyishness of Carter, you brought in a very serious deadpan face, early precursor to George Bush Jr.'s dumb face, And then even dumb Trump, but Reagan, he had to represent a small town sobriety. You know what I mean? No longer urban.
He was a Carter update, you could say. So,
all the presidents stand on the previous images and add new wrinkles to it. So
that's right.
Yeah, Bill Clinton was everybody. Kennedy, Reagan, the whole quadrophenic panoply. Then that flipped people in a way. Didn't care about the White House image anymore. They were sick of having to monitor it, and Gore and Clinton blew it. So they brought in a guy who consciously bragged that he didn't read the newspapers and was not informed. That was George Bush Jr. He was a post-information guy image or charisma.
Post-information in every way.
Yeah. And then they had to bring in a smoothie. And remember, tactility is black. That's the color of tactility. The non-color is black. So they had to bring in a hyper solid tactile image and black tactile image. And that's Obama, who was supposedly very sober and measured and wise, even though he kept contradicting himself with the wars he got himself into and the droning. But he had an appeal to a sobriety, but he was a black sobriety. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then that flipped into no more White House.
Yeah, Obama was sort of the last gasp attempt to show that management was still possible.
Yeah.
Not possible in the old white...
white way.
Executive, white shirt way, yeah, but in a new inclusive way. But, of course, it was just a mask. And in the background, all the old bullshit was going on.
Yeah, so listen to this. So the McLuhan said in the 60s, the black population, symbolized by new civil rights, were taking on literate values right when the white people were abandoning literate values and going tribal. That's the counterculture and the new age and whatever the white Protestants got into in terms of not being upright Catholics anymore or upright citizens. They were floundering around all over the place. Think of that movie Shampoo. Do you ever see? Remember that Warren Beatty in Shampoo? That was an expression.
I saw it decades ago.
Yeah, that's like the 70s or something, maybe late 60s. So you're right. What I'm saying, McLuhan did comment on the inadequacy of the white face, the chiaroscuro of the white face. Could not meet the sculptural ivory quality of the black face. So that was more tribal and didn't have literate personality in it. So in the 60s, the whites were leaving the literacy and the blacks were trying to become literacy. And remember, he said the Watts riots were people realizing, this literacy ain't working. We don't want it. We want to be electric. And eventually they got their act together and took over with hip-hop or rap.
Yeah.
Which ran as a popular, still going sort of, for 30 or 40 years, right? Rock and roll didn't last that long. All the different styles of music never got a 40-year empire, right? So something about rap was relevant to the electric eternity we were getting into, where nothing's going to change by Reagan time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a tribal encyclopedia reviticus.
Right. And then, okay, so you had a delay in the white structure management of the White House, so you had a black guy, an oral black guy, trying to be white or accepted as white because
they
were black.
He was doing a better job of being white than any white person.
Say that again?
He was doing a better job at being white than any white person.
Because he had the requisite deadpan, you know, a cool face.
He had the gift of the gab.
Yeah, he was a smooth... that would be white talk, right? He was...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
White talk in a black face.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that McLuhan said that the black bottom of the 20s came back as the white bottom of the 60s. Do you know that line?
No, but that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, the black bottom is the... can't remember any of their names, but, you know, whatever, the blues, Betty somebody, whoever those blues girls were in the 20s.
Yeah, in Paris.
Yeah, they were sexy. But the white bottom is Woodstock and the suburban kids that run around naked. So that's what he said. The white bottom came up in the 60s as a retrieval of the black bottom. But it had to be the white people doing it.
Yeah, well, that happened on many levels, right?
Turned
to black music and all of the major sports basically went from white to black.
Right. So then you have the Rolling Stones and John Mayall. They brought in the blues into Dean Martin land, top 40 music. And then you had the Motown, so that was raunchy for its time. But the blues came in, and then you had the sleek disco, which is somehow the beginning of the digital world, the cable world, the beginning of the computer world in the late 70s. It went out, it left the blues mode. And I remember hearing living up in Canada, some Muddy Waters and those guys on As It Happens saying that these black guys, who were very popular in the early 70s because the British people, they acknowledged that they had recycled blues stuff. They on As It Happens said that they can't get gigs, that disco took over. And then disco was seen as very surface by some people, depending on your age and when you entered into the tactile mix of rock music. The disco wiped out the black level. And then there was, like, new tech, new wave came in. So you're starting to get into high-tech music, or they put the word tech in, which was really just software, computer screens taking over, whatever you call them. They're tactile, I guess, the computer screen. And then the blacks come back in with non-music, with guttural grunting, caveman grunting, which is rap. You get that?
Well, sort of, but I mean, it's more than grunting, right?
No, it's, but it's for the white person, it is not music, you know.
Right. Okay, you're talking about from a certain perspective.
Yeah. Well, the majority of North Americans white, and they're reacting to the feds, and so I encountered many people I knew when rap came in, you know, by the mid '80s, because I was at CKLN, and. Yeah. I could see a lot of the baby boomers or even Generation Xers were having trouble accepting rap. It just was too non-musical or just crazy, you know, and the scratching of the record. So, but then 30 years of that, it's just like people hated the Beatles in the 60s were dancing to the Beatles at their weddings in the 80s. Well, rap became accepted. The population got molded by the frequencies of the Android meme era, let's say, and the rap resonated with that, rap and hip-hop.
Yeah. Well, the whole world is rapping.
Yeah, and that's where we're moving. We've been in an electric eternity since the 80s. We had completely wiped out literacy and any vestiges of any sanity, and so that's why the Reagan image was trying to retrieve it, but on a small-town, non-literate level. You know, the local yokel of small town reality is what Reagan was appealing to. And then it's actually happened through politics from that point on, because only 30% of Americans vote. 70% don't engage in it. It's not a relevant environment. They're living beyond it. Multi-level, quadriphenic. So once rap came, once we got to the Reagan era, you know, fundamentalism, conservatism of preserving your national image went all over the planet. You understand that the fundamentalists of, since global tourism took over, every country started to celebrate its tribal institutions.
Right, as show business, you could say.
Yeah, as show
business.
It was no longer
possible to have the traditions as traditions.
Yeah, because nobody lived them anymore. They were becoming fragmented and atomized in the chip body.
Right. Well, many things can't be done if they're observed. And
did you say absurd or observed?
Observed. Seen.
Yes. They can't happen if they're seen, if they're conscious.
Right.
So
just as an example, Bob, when we're talking about the transition from Carter to Reagan, Reagan certainly did have this small town image, Dixon, Illinois, but so did Carter. So what Reagan did was he made the small town image complex by showing that it was compatible with entertainment.
Yes, and he added he became an emperor. There was a book written by a ton of media people, you know, hip guys in New York, about how Reagan was retrieving the Chinese emperor. Mm-hmm. He was putting on the whole global environment.
Correct.
And the Russians were losing.
Again, because he was an actor and he had had all these different roles.
That implied a sophistication that was put on, of a simple put on.
Yeah, but it is that... having all those roles is what an emperor is, right?
Yeah. Yes, Carter was trying to go somewhere, as McClune would say, the old-fashioned leader. But the emperor didn't go anywhere. He just put everybody on. So Reagan brought that in. And it required to be apolitical, beyond all the normal literate issues, and put everybody on. And an image of that putting everybody on is the actor. And McLuhan predicted the actor and Reagan would become president in 76. Did you know that? In People magazine.
Yeah, you've mentioned that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he predicted that Reagan was the perfect guy who merged himself with his role. He became the role, like a zombie, so to speak. And that was the fact that he was, quote, an actor. But everybody was becoming an actor. Now, here's another pattern. Because the Global Theater turned everybody into actors and all crew, remember that statement by McLuhan? All crew. Then you had to have a traditional actor, a bona fide real actor, as an anti-environment to the whole population becoming actors.
Yeah, that's funny. That's right.
Yeah, and the participation mystique is the whole world became acting. And so, fuck this, we need standards. Bring back a great actor, Ronald Reagan, who actually was a lousy actor. But he used to talk about, I don't know how true this is, but I got this from Mae Brussel. She quoted a few stories when he was president. He would talk about his life in World War II, his service, and he'd be talking about the movies he was in. So there was levels of insanity that nobody could really deal with, and it was ignored. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you could his ranch up in the sky.
Yes,
fits this perfectly.
Yeah, aren't you near his ranch?
Well, near enough.
Yeah,
California.
Yeah. And Nixon was nearby in San Clemente. They all went to the paradise.
And his birthplace in Whittier.
That's right. Yes. They all went to the utopia of California.
Correct.
Everybody retired in California. Now, what a mess California is now, for fuck's sake. It's just incredible, the flip there. What is it with the governor just not handling the homeless? What is a McLuhan version of why the homeless cannot be handled properly in L.A., say, or San Francisco?
Well, I mean, you see, the whole question is what properly means. The governor and from the people that vote for him, properly in terms of the homeless, is to either leave them alone or to aid their homelessness as homeless. So for that type of thinking, homelessness is more or less what we all are.
Right. That's what I'm going to quote you. In 64, McLuhan wrote in Understanding Media that we were going to become drifting homeless people. He said that. Okay.
Sure. Well, that's what tactility is in a certain sense.
Yeah, yeah. So as over the next 50 years, the whole world becomes homeless because they're living in many different spaces, quadraphenic spaces. So there now is great respect for homeless people, and they're allowed to have the rights to set up a tent wherever they want to. That would be archetypalizing the chemical body homelessness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're the only authentic ones.
That's right. That's right. We're honoring the real people. Just like Reagan was a real actor, not these amateurs that were in your neighborhood. So this is updating the application of McLuhan's patterns. It works. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So we're in this electric eternity, and Trump objected to it, and he wanted to get back to some place. He called it America. Bring back America. Yep. Make America great again.
But all of these things were not external to the world of entertainment. They were internal to it.
Yeah.
That's the big problem with Trumpism and all this stuff is that it's true that it would be good to see through the world of entertainment. But to try to do that with Trump is a very difficult matter.
Right, because politics was becoming more entertaining than entertainment.
Sure, as McLuhan said.
Yeah, the viciousness. I think Zappa said that politics was the B level of the entertainment world. It was for the B-grade actors.
Yeah, that's
the ugly actors. Yeah. So, and then... then everything becomes politics. So there isn't politics, and everybody is supposedly yelling and screaming at each other. America has become very divided, and all the other stuff they've been saying for the last 5 years since Trump came in. So Trump expressed the extreme lack of civility in all of our bodies, not just the chemical body.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then we got our comeuppance. We got the fucking plague, right? And then you have this great media ecology where everybody's forced to stay home. You know, McClellan wrote that. He said, "I suggest people stay home." He wrote that like in the early 70s. He didn't. He thought that the people were going out and being activists and having movements. He thought that was all a waste of time because the electric attorney that was coming in would obsolesce them all. So we eventually all became McLuhan. We stayed home with COVID.
Yeah. So when you called that media ecology, you mean peace beyond understanding? Is that what you mean? Yeah.
The electric eternity, you mean?
No, but when you call it media ecology by staying home.
Yes.
They're staying out of the battle.
Yes.
Of media and everything else.
They're cutting down the natural instinct to participate, to bounce it off by a yoga. He said the new yoga will be self-entertainment. He said that in Forbes in 1966. And that was a good line. And so over time, to this point, you would stay home and do self-entertainment and wouldn't be disrupting the ecology by engaging in the normal tactile chaos of everyday life, of the multiple bodies that were starting to be grown. Mm-hmm. So you withdrew from being the content.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
This is one of the ways that he analyzed Eastern religions like Buddhism.
Yes. Everybody's a dropout. Another thing he said in Understanding Media, the dropout phenomenon was going to spread. All kinds of things will be dropouts. You could say the 70% that don't vote are dropouts from civic responsibility.
Right. But on McLuhan's analysis, everybody is dropping out all the time. We just don't have any notion of it.
Right, and dropping in. That's a take today.
Yes.
Drop out and drop in.
Yeah, that's the whole mode of human perception, dropping in and out every second, every microsecond.
Yeah, so, that became the environments. That got extended.
Mm-hmm.
The drop in, drop out. So that may be what hip-hop means. You hop from body to body, environment to environment.
Yeah, yeah. Perception to perception, personality to personality. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's got a major, what might be called a positive pole to it.
Yeah, and so jumping. Oh yeah. So in the literate age. To not be flat on matchable. You had to be known what you were. You were Catholic or something. Couldn't talk about it in public, but everybody knew you were a Catholic. So it was simple matching and categorization. And if you started to play with that in any way, you were a hypocrite, right? You started to move into the put-on, electric or pre-literate put-on. Now, as over the last 30 years, people started to put on different environments, hypocrisy got accepted, or the problem of hypocrisy for literate people got accepted, and everybody became a liar, and it was given. You would accept chemical body lying because you were hopping from one environment to another, and so you would get people in their social lives would be in very different environments from whatever their job was. They would surprise where some people would join cults. Other people would become, drug addicts on the weekend or something.
Right.
I'm talking about the put-on of environments and of bodies is the new hypocrisy.
But McLuhan was very interesting in pointing out that people would find lying entirely acceptable and admirable in some contexts, but not in others, right? So you've been talking about people who were Catholic and then they weren't Catholic. People didn't say to themselves, well, I can be a Catholic even though I'm lying. No, that was impossible for them, right? But if they talked about going to a bar and giving the wrong name or saying they weren't married or something like that, then that was great.
Yep, that made you more fluid. You could enjoy all the different environments.
Yeah, so that, this is this rough tactility that you're talking about.
Right.
Where people weren't, they were out of control and that they had different dominance in different aspects of their lives, and they had no idea how to square these dominance.
With their old values, the so-called values of Christmas, Easter, or Thanksgiving.
All of those were involved in the mix now.
Yeah. And so for a lot of people, every day was a party, a holiday. I remember McLuhan saying in the early 70s, he says, why do anything more than 6 months? And on top of that, since you can get, he says, I know a friend, he just quit his job and he got unemployment for a year or two. And you know, that was quite shocking in the early 70s that people could just drop out and do nothing. And the welfare society would give them some money. That flipped into hard times by the mid-70s. You know, the welfare stuff was started to be imposed upon and cut back. And that made people, they'd lose their jobs. They'd get into the part-time economy, the temp economy, and the stress of could they get welfare, get a little bit. And overall, the population started to experience what McLuhan called tribal hardship. You know, in literate societies, it was affluence and poverty. But not in tribal societies, everybody shares hardship. So by the 80s in the Reagan era, there was stagflation and all these problems and more unemployment. So people started to experience hardship. And then that made them more casual and rough and drug or alcohol-oriented and just giving up. And not being civilized and proper anymore and showing up at work at 9 to 5 every week, every day.
They didn't have values, but they needed values more than ever.
Yeah.
Although they didn't know they were expressing
values. And you know what that led into? That led into fundamentalists, everybody becoming a born-again Christian. That was the attempt to retrieve literate values.
Sure.
Virtue.
Sure, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it's one rebound of being at loose ends.
Right. And I remember Mailer, you know, he was popular in the 60s as an interacting guy running for mayor and all this, beating up his wives. He had all kinds of different images. But
boxing.
Yes. And he faded out by the 80s. And I saw him being interviewed sometime in the 80s, way after his time. He still was putting out novels that were popular, but he was no longer in the public sphere. And he said, what I've discovered is that Americans are obsessed with virtue. So I thought that was a good statement. I adapted that with a bit of a McLuhan angle, virtue being literate values, what we were just saying. People got into retrieving some kind of value, and it became religious.
Yeah.
It was
but, of
so
course,
intense.
Nietzsche had said this in the 1870s and 80s, right, that the fate of Western civilization is that people can't live without a morality. It's just that they don't have a traditional morality anymore.
Right.
And that they would do anything, suicide themselves, suicide the entire planet out of morality.
Right. McLuhan called that wearing your conscience on your sleeve. So people would find different forms of trying to be decent, like a lot of donation to charities or causes or dropping out and becoming get involved with causes yourself, like the World Vision Organization. They'd go out to the rest of the world and, you know, be missionaries. People who weren't inclined to be missionaries normally but eventually would, in their identity crisis, become missionaries and drop out of North America, so to speak. It'd be
all of this stuff is very manipulable.
Yes.
Right. So that behind all this stuff are media environments.
Surveillance.
That are, well, surveilling and suggesting.
Well, that's what I mean. The advertising
ways to
be
a good person and stuff.
The advertising was doing the surveilling, and they could be a little more conscious of the trends and then reflect the images back in the commercials and that and sell products as people formed identities just from watching advertising.
Mm-hmm.
As they confused information from the program to the commercial, it all blurred. So advertising got into this archetypal level of actually giving values to people. And ads no longer did the hard sell, McLuhan said. They started to do the soft sell, which is their product that you're watching the commercial for was had all these incredible values to it. It
Correct.
Had values.
But also there was no barrier, any border anymore between entertainment and ads.
Yeah,
right?
And religion.
Everything was ads.
Yeah, and that's where Finnegan's Wake predicted that. You know, Finnegan's Wake mimed where we got to by the 80s. The mixture of everything, all mm-hmm. the institutions. So what the mixture? Then when the internet came in, you then could ignore the iconography, the mixed media iconography of the TV landscape, which was going to become, under digitalization, the TV body. But when people started to have the chip landscape with the internet, and it gradually became the chip body, they're now orbiting around all the old analog media and all the institutions. Baudrillard talked about the orbiting economy. So that is another part of eternity, is the autonomy, and everybody's staying, you know, they go to work and they go home and they get on the computer and start attacking people or whatever they do, and whatever form they're in, right? Expressing literate bashing opinions against each other. That became Reddit. Clinton experienced the Reddit world. It's interesting hearing, you know, he grew up with it, and how the alt-right and the pro-Trumpers showed up in Reddit in 2013 and 2014 before Trump showed up. And they were out to get the matriarchs of the society, largely university professor feminists who had taken over academia. Theo told me that in his experience, the feminists took over the cultural studies and they wouldn't teach Joyce anymore. That would be in the 90s and 2000s. That was too male,
yeah.
Or too something. And so the women took over in the 2000s, running the culture and academia, and then the alt-right was a reaction to that by the discarnate, multi-bodied male principle, we'll call them, because they're not males. They're not chemical body males. They're the male principle, or a male ironic, satirical, manipian attitude.
Yeah, a male mask.
Yeah, the male mask was a figure that Trump rode in on, and the audience saw that and they supported him. The male mask people and the women were appalled. Remember, they had a global protest in the day after he was sworn in, it wasn't the election. Remember, they all wore pink hats, a million women, and they went to Washington. They protested the inauguration.
Vaguely, a million man march.
It was a million women march. But
right.
It was an expression of people being humiliated. The women, McLuhan said, people would feel more and more ripped off in the 60s and 70s. Their old chemical body identities were just not going to make it anymore. So they were very, resentment was the postmodern word for it. A lot of resentment happened, right?
Yeah, yeah. Another favorite word of Nietzsche.
Yes. And then there
came in 100 years after he died.
Right. Yeah. He predicted the coming shifts or the big psychic storms. So the resentment and disgust with everything. McLuhan wrote about that just before he died. So the women were disgusted at what had been polluting the TV body. See, the TV by then is not a landscape, it's a body. And everybody has one-fifth of themselves has the TV body. And the women objected to the pollution that had stormed into the TV body. That was the Trump image. And an anti-female, they took it personally. This is anti-women. And then the Me Too thing happened.
Yep.
So you can You can now what we're saying, I don't think there's anybody in the world saying what we're saying. They don't know McLuhan enough to apply it. But it's very unique how we're analyzing what's happening. Beyond normal editorials and columns using right, left, or smart, stupid categories of literacy. You don't apply, you don't use those categories in this situation.
Correct, correct. And one thing I noticed is that in our talks, the amount of text that we're going through in your book is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, right?
Well, yeah, so, the more you understand my text, you don't need it. You're now joining the game. You've entered into the fray here.
Well, a phrase like tactility squared, which is where we started,
yes,
is so loaded. It's so
it's almost
important.
Too big. It's too
That's
big.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, it's like the history of the universe.
Yeah, we've squared the history of the universe. So that's what I'm saying here. Let me just finish this. It imitates us, the aping. And I say
yeah.
The first stage of the Android meme, the global hologram, that's in the 60s, started imitating people showing the rough parts of humans. Violent TV, stupid talk shows, violent talk shows. That's where we got to. So the rest of the quote is, this was the way humans were, and TV was no longer a polite place. It became a rough place, and that was the Android meme, looking like people. Well, actually, I did say this. And people got distracted by that. I didn't say this line. And people got distracted by that and didn't know they were being simulated by the Android meme. They got distracted at the imitation of their chemical body issues, the violence of chemical body, and everybody started complaining that the population is getting dumber, and they missed the building of the TV body. And the chip body, that came in as a novelty, maybe an escape from the disgust they were seeing in the TV body or the TV landscape with the violent TV content. So
these bodies that you're talking about are getting born?
Yes.
But are they getting born because of a pre-existing possibility that was always there? Or are they getting born because they have a technological presupposition that's only now available?
Right. You know, when TV was TV as an environment in the 50s and 60s, then it started to break up and become something different with cable TV. And I don't know how much digitalization was in cable TV, but when you get to the digital world of the Internet, that absorbs the TV landscape, the chemical body landscape, and the astral landscape. It shrinks it, and the whole TV landscape, huge environment of the 50s, 60s, becomes an organ attached to you like a barnacle. And so you have the whole TV experience in your Palm Pilot. It's shrunk. The environment of it is shrunk. So the digitization is making the TV landscape, the chemical body landscape, and the astral landscape is making them bodies. That's the pattern here. So the digital technology made this happen, and then the chip body was digitization itself, and that became self-conscious, you could say. And then that becomes the Android meme, and technology comes alive. That would be the chip body. The chip world was digitizing the other spaces, the other landscapes, but then what happens to itself? It becomes self-reflexive, self-conscious something. So you could say the chip body is squared. You see what I'm saying? See, the chip body,
I think so.
The chip landscape is digitizing everything. That's normal common sense. But it gradually becomes shrunk and becomes a person's new body. And so it's mm-hmm. absorbing and digitizing the previous landscapes. And then itself, you could say in Web 2.0, becomes a super vehicle where people were kings of their own media. They became broadcasters. Who ever fucking saw that coming? Where everybody
yeah.
could be their own TV station.
Yeah.
And nobody, I don't think anybody wrote novels about that as part of 1984 or Brave New World or even Neuromancer. Gibson is timid. His cyberspace stuff in Neuromancer, which came out, 1984 or so? that's timid to compare to the reality of 2.0 in the last 10 years.
Right. But if you went back and looked at what McLuhan was talking about with Xerox.
Yes.
And the Xeroxization of society, you would see a lot of what's happening right now.
Yeah, Xerox, the book made everybody a reader. Xerox made everybody a publisher.
Correct.
That's what he said. So then, I don't think he said it, but the Internet or the digitization that was coming would make everybody a broadcasting network.
Correct.
And then on top of that, you would not only broadcast, you would surveil more. You'd experience more. So you became your own intelligence agency. Because you were spying on everybody in the chip body.
Well, that's right. And you had it just normal to talk about your number of followers and
your cult.
All of this sort of stuff, right?
Everybody had a cult. Yeah, that's important to realize that. The cults were a phenomenon in the baby boomers. But once you get into Generation X and the millennials, everybody aspires to be an influencer, to be a cult. It's not a stigma anymore.
Correct.
So you see what we're saying. I don't know. I know Wired magazine occasionally in the 90s would predict. They said something's coming here, something weird. I remember reading an article around 2010 where the next stage in the chip economy was the companies would have to give away everything. Google would have to give away stuff as opposed to there's Google and YouTube maybe. But the point is that information, you got a superior position in the market, the guy was saying, and it happened, that the more free you gave people, the more you'd be more popular.
That's the story of Apple, right?
Right. So Apple was the other company.
They give away the camera for free.
Right.
And inside the phone is a radio. That's for free. Inside the phone is a TV. That's for free.
All the analog media.
Yeah.
Are for free. So what that meant, okay, so you're so what happened is the Android meme, this separate world that you didn't notice that had left you, started selling ridiculous data about what you did, what you said about yourselves. And that was a weird new economy now called surveillance capitalism by that Harvard professor, that woman. But they are selling from like 2012 on, they are selling the exchange of nothing, of data about what people, they could make patterns, or they thought they could make patterns out of it. And so they start selling it to each other, Facebook and Amazon and Apple or whatever other companies.
Yeah. It does, and it doesn't matter. All relation to truth or importance
has
been lost. All that matters is that you can sell this stuff and you can become the biggest company in the world by doing it.
And doing nothing. That was, older people say, I don't understand what's going on. These companies, what do they do? But they actually were just digital environments. That's why they were, quote, utilities. But they weren't seen as utilities in the industrial mentality, literal mentality of America. You had to have private ownership. You had to sell shit. And so they made up the selling of the medium itself, of the exchange action, of digital packets.
Which McLuhan had foreseen.
Yes.
McLuhan tried to tell General Electric and corporations and IBM
They were in the wrong business. They didn't know what the name of their business was.
That's right. But what he told them was that it's pattern recognition, it's information about your users, it's about allowing your users to be the medium.
Yes.
Of course, they understood none of that. But had they invested in those things, they would now be the huge corporations that Apple and Alphabet and
IBM failed. They were too part of the older analog phase. They couldn't
same
get the digital
GE.
Phase.
Yeah, same with GE. GE was a very early mover in mini computers.
But, yeah, and maybe you could say Ma Bell. That was broken up.
Oh, yeah, well, that's...
What was that? Is that AT&T? What was that?
Yeah, Ma Bell was AT&T.
Yeah, and they got broken up.
Yeah, but they also, they their biggest problem was that McLuhan said to them, look, you're in the information business.
Yeah.
And they never did understand that. Maybe they haven't understood it yet.
Right, because what's information? That's books, right? Books are information. That's serious shit, the literate background of America built on the printing press. So they never understood the electrical vortex as information, as knowledge.
Right.
On the content level, you would say, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the medium is the message. The fact that Facebook was just a medium with no content, and you make your own content, that is a step beyond the analog media world that McLuhan's talking about. That, in a way, is the medium becoming self-conscious. It was able to turn itself into apparent content that could be sold. But it still was just a fucking technology that you could type on and explore on many levels.
Right. But notice it's free.
Yeah.
Right? It seems to be free.
Right. Right.
And it's like a billboard, right? The billboard takes over a public space, but the public has no claim on it.
Yeah.
So the billboard is able to generate income. Precisely because it's not charged for the public space that it assumes.
It becomes
exactly
an environment, and it's new, so it's not considered taxable or commercialized or something that we consider an invasion. It's a new novelty. It's a new extension of ourselves that we wallow around in and don't know the implications for older media that it is.
Right.
Older media being the economy.
Right, or for our children, or for anything.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the massive irresponsibility that McLuhan was addressing. That is the new hypocrisy. Remember he said, your private conscience is trivial. What the areas of concern you have in your private conscience are nothing compared to the collective responsibility that you're ignoring. Because you're allowing, you're giving these monster bombs to your kids for Christmas. And they're going to blow up your family.
Correct.
Massive. Would that be? It's a kind of hypocrisy to refuse to notice that. To say,
it's a hypocrisy that extends all the way to self harm and self suicide.
Yeah.
Right?
And collective suicide too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And why did the industrial hardware, the roads and all that, were ignored from the 80s on in the United States? And nobody fucking repaired the bridges. Where were they? They were lost in other spaces. They weren't on planet anymore, on the chemical body planet. Do you know what I mean? Did you ever wonder about how the hell could they let all these highways go, whereas countries who are doing newer technology and didn't have that backlog, like China, were having the most developed trains that were way better than anything here in North America, right? They implemented that stuff.
Yeah, and are doing so right this minute.
Yeah, and then you have, so then in the United States, North America, you have people miming the multi-bodied dangling ganglia and the endless stimulation of that by doing drugs on all levels. I don't know, from fentanyl to whatever the latest stuff is, which is killing thousands of people.
Oh, yeah, but the drugging doesn't just take place through chemical drugs.
Right.
If you look at Canada now, these big storms that just hit British Columbia and took out all of the roads and the rail lines and stuff so that Vancouver became an island.
Right.
On the West Coast, cut off from the rest of Canada. What kind of stupidity has to have taken control of people's minds that they haven't built the kinds of highways and the kinds of tunnels that the whole rest of the world is building to protect themselves from stuff like this?
Yes.
Right. You look at Norway, you look at China, you look at Austria, you look at Switzerland, you look at France, you look at Italy. All of these countries are doing what Canada needs to do, but the Canadians are drugged out, right? Not necessarily on drugs. They're just drugged out.
They're drugged out on analog media. Analog media.
Now, whatever it is.
Well, listen, here, this could be it. because America was built on the printing press, so it's the most abstracted schizoid as a literate effect, the Gutenberg effect. Europe and them, they weren't ecologists, but they had more ecological understanding of the effects of technologies on their environments than North Americans. North Americans are the most abstract, inscrutable people. That's what McLuhan said, that China was no longer the inscrutable East, the inscrutable West for most of the world. Looking at this crazy place that lost touch with its chemical body reality. And so they make a big problem out of climate change and the ecology. They make ecology a religion, but they're not doing it to their industrial media environments.
Yeah.
They don't see it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a very peculiar type of blindness.
Yes. The big factor is whether you're a literate society or not. Literacy creates a huge blindness under the onslaught of the electric, because it traumatizes the literate. But Americans were more traumatized than anybody. The Europeans were traumatized for McDonald's restaurants or something that appeared to invade their chemical body world there. Mm-hmm. But they aren't as effective as who's ecological? Maybe China. They wouldn't allow. They don't let the internet come in and wreck their society. They really control it, right? So they're ecological with the internet. But because it's global and solar, nobody really can stop the erosion that the tactility squared is doing to everybody, to every culture.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's the Armageddon, right. The apocalypse. I say that the electric media is the fifth horseman of the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Not seen. They're all reading the Bible. Well, they didn't before the printing press, but the Protestants read the Bible and they studied the Revelations and the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and they had these chemical body, famine, starvation, whatever those four are, and they missed that the Protestant world out of Europe started building this hidden virus called technology, and they built the industrial technology, then the electric technology, and I guess that was taken over by America, but it's still the West. That was a monster sneaking up on everybody while everybody was trying to do something about the war and the four horsemen. They were trying to prevent that, but that was rearview mirror.
Right.
So I think Finnegan's Wake is an upgrade of the Book of Revelation, because it's showing you the monster of media that was being sneaking up on the Western world.
Right. But wouldn't McLuhan say to this that the electrical monster is us?
They are us. Yeah, we're right? All super kings.
So that means that it's not something that we have to control out there.
Right.
It's if we're going to do something about the electric environment, it's something that we have to understand about ourselves, and that we actually can understand because it's us.
That's
right?
The self-entertainment is the new yoga. And he has a great line in Take Today that government, I don't know if that's the exact word, but it's basically the idea is that psychic ecology cannot happen on a national or international level. It happens on a media ecology level in terms of self-entertainment as the new yoga. Yoga being a disciplined meditative act or something, mm-hmm. for monasteries.
But isn't yoga in this sense part of the apocalypse?
Yeah.
Isn't it insofar as the best we can do is sort of entertain ourselves about this stuff?
It's inadequate. There is no solution other than understanding what's going on.
Correct. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, and you can't do anything about it, but at least it's like someone said that in the concentration camps, the victims, the pain was really a mental pain. They didn't know why it was happening. Why are we being killed like this? Well, today, the best you can do is understand why you're going to be killed collectively.
Right, but you see, Bob, I think this is where we may have a difference, and that is I keep talking about chemistry and the need for science, and what I'm not saying is that we need to have more of the physical sciences. What I'm saying is that understanding is not something that can be limited to individuals. science is itself a collective activity that involves everybody one way or another and involves all things.
And okay, so I have a great answer for that. I understood that McLuhan created a new science, a new language for collective understanding. He talked about that. People are not being collectively responsible for the environments they're creating. That's why the private conscience doesn't matter. So I got on there on the radio, and I was, quote, a fascist telling everybody, you have to know this shit. I don't care what else you do. If you're a Catholic, mystic, or whatever things, you could be an artist or a scientist. You have to understand the media ecology, because that's what is in public. That is the public language, the public dialogue, not your private opinion. That was my stance. Many people said, Bob, you're a fucking fanatic. You know, you're thinking, we've got to fucking turn off TV. That's nuts. You know, nobody understood their collective responsibility. And that's what I put on.
But the if you imagine alchemists and pharmacists and mining engineers around 1780, you can imagine them having different opinions, some of them very strident, about what they were doing, what was the nature of the materials that they were working with. And gradually, starting around 1780, people began to understand that the way to focus these activities was in terms of the chemical elements. And the reason that chemical elements were able to gain traction and then change the whole world over the next 200 years was that they had practical results.
Collective knowledge. Everybody can see the shared environment, which had to have the framework of literacy to get on to start to fix it and look at these things and categorize them. You had to have the book to frame
that's
that.
That's right. But now, within understanding media, the book and literacy would be part of not only part of the how of the study, but also part of the what of the study, right? So the understanding that McLuhan saw as necessary was collective and would not be forced. It would not be the object of an imperative. You have to do this, you have to do that. It would build on itself just as the physical sciences did in the 19th century. They would find ways of, for example, right now going on in the world, there's this huge contest between exceptionalism, one exceptional nation, and multipolarism. And if that is not going to end in disaster, it's going to end because people see through the categories of
the content.
These things, right? And what could be more practical than finding a way to end the potential of apocalypse? Nothing.
Right, and this is where we've become aware of tactility. It's become a figure. In other words, we've become aware of the mind, which is what McLuhan used to write in the 50s, that we had extended the learning process. Remember how he went on about that? And the drama of cognition and the process of creating a society. He talks about that in that book by the Norwegian aristocrat, Forms of Social Survival. He said this is where the oligarchs are going to use Christianity as a public ideology of managing the world under, quote, love, Christian love.
Right.
And he was,
right.
And he saw that's what Lucifer would do when he,
correct.
You know, the prince of the air. So
that's because what you have going on there is you have a ideology of global control.
Yes.
And so McLuhan was warning against what McLuhan
said. Orpheus tuned the world, which is where I got Orphic Baroque Spouse from, him saying that Orpheus could tune the world today.
Right. So he said that in regard to Schaeffer.
Yes. Well, he did, tuning the sky. What is the sky? That's a nothingness. But it is tactility in a way, in a sense,
correct.
It has no content.
That's right. So just as with nuclear weapons, We have something that can be hugely destructive, or it can be something constructive. It's exactly the same with mind.
Yeah.
We're either going to suicide ourselves through mind, or mind is going to find a way out of the cul-de-sac.
Right, and that's why, you know, one of the things I had to take a while to figure out what he meant, every now and then he would, if you read McLuhan closely and in his articles, he'd say, we were extending the learning process, the creative process itself, the act of creating, of thinking and making stuff, which the Western world was celebrating for 300 years, called a progress, that became the figure, the learning process itself. And so what took over since the 50s was cognitive studies. But that's just a left hemisphere specialization and complexification of the basic point that the global hologram had extended the learning process. So that meant that you didn't need school, or you had to do school differently if everybody was learning anyways and it was an external environment. You see what I'm saying? That could be what you're calling your interior landscape, exploring your interior landscape. So you know that phrase, right? Extending the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, that's how you made a society. You have the conscious means to make culture. And advertising and media trends is the haphazard bourgeois forming of consciousness and cultures, you know, five of them every 12 months.
Right. So you have the extending of the learning process, which can go in one of two directions. It either leads you into hell,
yeah,
right? I think in the Christian humanism lecture in 1954, didn't he say we've got ourselves onto Mount Purgatory?
Yeah,
and either we're going to hell or we're going to invent a new way of living in peace.
Right, and so what did you? You were just saying about mind. We're extending the mind. We're becoming conscious and recognizing that it's a complex act to recognize that, a complex act of the mind to recognize that you extended the mind and it's doing you in. So what is the mind to do? Now, William Thompson had an interesting pattern. He went through five phases of development of humans, Paleolithic, Neolithic, and then the Mediterranean thing, then the industrial, then the planetary, the electronic global planetary. And each one had a victim. The first victim was animals, then woman, then man and language, I think it was, then agriculture, some phase in there.
Yeah,
in
nature,
industrial.
Maybe.
Yeah, nature. But the victim in the 20th century in the planetary fifth phase was the mind. See, so the left hemisphere, especially part of the mind, is what's numbed. Yeah, it was something I was going to say about the numbing.
In all of these things, what gets sacrificed is what needs to be retrieved, what needs to be protected, and which is potentially what can save.
Yes, you have to retrieve the role of knowing in a new way.
Yeah. So when we're talking about the exteriorization of learning, what happens there is that you become a consciousness of nothing, right? Tactility involves a kind of flip through nothing. And that becomes conscious, not necessarily as a positive thing, but it becomes conscious in various ways. And that is what needs to be understood.
Right. Okay. So that's what I was trying to say 2 minutes ago. The hell is you think everybody's getting dumb, but actually everybody's engaging in processing the daily learning of pattern recognition just to keep up or have a sense of sharing the discarnate community. So we're misinterpreting the Finnegan's awake as Finnegan's becoming numb and dumb. And the literate people in New York, they feel superior. They're rearview mirroring it, and they don't see the population become smarter than anybody because it's processing everything, which is beyond educational categories. Just people have to be almost geniuses in adjusting to what's going on all the day, every day.
Correct.
In the information
Correct.
Society. And we're calling that dumb because nobody has time to talk to it. They're just keeping up. And they don't have the language to talk back to it. But McClune provided the language to talk back to it and become conscious
yeah.
of this
yeah.
process and that made everybody appear to be becoming dumb.
And the process that you're talking about is actually the new science.
That's it. Yep.
Because,
I was going to say that.
Because what? Yeah, because what's going on is everybody working on collective problems and solutions, but it's as if we're harvesting the grain, but then we're leaving it in the field.
Yes, and so that's where we, there's a comp, he called it complex clairvoyance was going on. People are processing information, making patterns, but they haven't got time to communicate it, but they absorb it, and then they might notice it in other people, or it happens in their jobs, they just are coordinating. So we are really super intelligent responding beings, else we would have blown ourselves up 50 years ago if we were still
yeah.
stupid. And the elites who were hoping to have a nuclear war and trying to have one in the 50s.
And still are.
And still are. Some of the military is still trying to do it. They can't get they can't mobilize the pop, the discarnate super angels to get focused on it. Because the people are dealing with their daily apocalypse, which is a constant revelation. That's what apocalypse means. The constant revelation of whatever new bullshit that they got to notice and be able to talk about, or at least be aware of. And so
yeah.
you've got, you know, 70% of the population doesn't vote, and they know the election was stolen, and they don't care because they don't live in that world. They live beyond that in the super angelic. It doesn't matter who the hell who's president, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
pay attention to what the president says about any fucking issue. You immediately say it's not relevant. First of all, he's speaking in English. That's wrong. You got to speak in fucking Finneganese to talk to all the people that are listening, all the cultures. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, listening to the president or the president's press secretary or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like eating sawdust.
Man, yes.
Nobody does that.
Right.
The media has the terrible job of trying to make that digestible for people.
Yeah, you got to have happening here is the media, the microphones and press conferences are our environment, and they have to be done because everybody has to keep talking to each other. It's a form of typing. So I don't pay attention to the weather. I notice the weather, it's nice, but I don't fucking concentrate it all day long. Jen Psaki and her press conferences are fucking weather, and they have to be done. You have to make a pattern for the day, and she goes out and responds to what the journalist. So the biggest employment is covering the information society. That's journalism. That's all the media covering. More people covered the Vietnam War than have fought in it, right? So the global coverage is the robotic world we live in, and that is the Android meme, or now the tech body, a monstrous robotic autonomic fucking thing that nobody has any control over.
Yeah, yeah. So the stuff at the top of my page 80, when you go through
oh, yeah.
the years, that's we sort of come up to that point, right? So
yes.
that's it's actually a very good point on which to end
yeah.
because it gives us a starting place for next time.
I'll make a note of this right away as soon as we hang up. We're starting at page 80 with you mean with my 40s, 50s chart there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the quadrivium. Yeah, that okay, now
yeah.
now we
because
know what we meant. Now we know we've worked ourselves up to understand what the hell I wrote. But that's why
yeah.
I enjoy these dialogues cuz I'm writing ahead of myself. You know, I'm actually using the correct language, but it takes a dialogue or some kind of exploration of what I meant. And that's what McClellan
correct.
Said. He didn't know what he thought until he said it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
I said yeah. it, now I'm figuring out what I said.
Right, right. Well, that's the great virtue of your mind is that it is ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah. I live right. ahead of myself. That's what
yes.
I am saying.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
So that leads to all kinds of public synchronicities, but that's another story.
Yeah.
Okay, so Very good. That was an exciting exploration.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I understand tactility squared a lot better. We touched on a lot of interesting things, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, I definitely say this one has got a lot of up-to-date modern pattern recognition in it.
That's right.
Okay, great. All right, talk to you in 2 weeks, Cameron.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye.